I am Thor, son of Odin. As long as there is life in my breast, I am running out of things to say.
Great, another broken white boy for us to fix.
That's my secret, Captain.
I'm always angry.
You took everything from me.
I don't even know who you are. With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Wakanda forever!
And welcome, Internet, to another episode of Views from the 616, the blackest MCU podcast in both years, powered by Four All Nerds. We discuss everything in the MCU from the perspective of people of color. And it is one of your hosts, Tatiana King, a.k.a. the Life and Times of Sharon Carter, a.k.a. AR Lord, a.k.a. T'Challa Bread, a.k.a. the Wicked Witch of the West View, a.k.a. the coldest winter soldier ever. And as usual, I'm here with my bespectacled co-host.
Yes, yes, yes. It's your boy, DJ Ben Amin, a.k.a. Brother Voodoo Child, the holla, 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 the Black Adam Warlock, A Nightmare on Ellis Street, Lieutenant Good Trouble, Thanos, the Sad Titan.
So ridiculous. Thank you, everybody, for joining up. What is up to everybody in the Twitch chat? Twitch.tv/4allnerds. If you're watching, you may see me in a little bit of a haze here because I'm here in the void ducking from a lion. So if you see me just looking around real mysteriously, that's why. I'm just trying to be safe. But as I said, thank you all for joining. Thank you everyone who's joining on the interwebs, whether you are watching us right now on whatever platform you're on, or you're listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, make sure you are following and subscribe to us. And before we get into things, let me first say thank you to Loot Crate for partnering with us. We've actually partnered with them to give our listeners 15% off a subscription. You can use our code FANSHOW15, FANSHOW15, in order to get your discount, okay? Now, I have to say, we're back to talk all things What If.
That's episode pretty fire right there.
Thank you. Yeah. Back to talk What If episode 2.
Hey.
First of all, episode 1 was fire. And if anyone says otherwise, you know, I almost said something rude there. I'm going to hold it. I'm going to relax.
Chill out.
I just heard some people just saying some wild stuff about episode 1. And I'm like, I think you are bugging. It was amazing. Yeah. But we're here to talk all things episode 2. What if T'Challa became Star-Lord? And in this one, what if the Ravagers abduct T'Challa instead of Peter Krill?
Peter Quill.
Quill. Did I say Krill? Sorry.
Sound like Peter, you said Peter Quill. Krull. Like Krull or Krull.
Oh, like the Krull show?
Ooh, there you go. For the Krull movie. Shout out to that obscure joint.
Oh. Yeah. All right. And as always, we have to get right into things with the themes of the episode. And every episode, we're going to have this one theme all the time because the watcher apparently is probably going to say this in the beginning about time, space, and reality, right? Yep. It being more than a linear path, it being a prism, all that stuff. We talked a lot about it on the first episode about what that means and the deep levels of where that goes. And as we notice in every episode, it's a single choice or, as we learned from Loki, a Nexus event that changes the course of that particular timeline.
Yep.
In this case, as we mentioned, this Nexus event was, instead of Yondu going down to get Peter Quill, instead he gets his subordinates, his idiotic underlings, to go and abduct Peter. But instead, because according to, I think, Taserface, they can't tell humans apart. They just have two eyes with two ears and a mouth, and that was enough for them. They get T'Challa.
Yes. Also because of a little mix-up, because T'Challa in this universe at that exact time happens to go outside of the Wakandan illusory shield with a vibranium spear and a giant mound of vibranium behind him, which attracts, you know, this ship.
They said it gives off-world energy, which it would, because his house is, as young T'Challa says, his house is built on an ancient vibranium meteorite.
So. Yes, which is an off-world energy, and also because they were looking for the off-world energy of Peter Quill. And as in the film Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it's revealed that Ego had been taking mad kids at this point. Like, Peter Quill was just, like, they'd effed up a bunch of times before Peter Quill. You know, they lucked up on him, and by the time they lucked up on him, Yondu was tired of giving this man kids and seeing him die, so.
Damn.
Yeah, Guardians
of the Galaxy. I forgot about that part. Yeah,
a lot of people
do. They were just abducting children left and right. Whoa.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is a lot darker than people remember it to be. But yeah, you know.
Yeah. And
this episode is a lot darker than people remember it to be too. But we'll get to that.
Well, you know, in watching this episode, I went back and not sat and watched all the way through, but scrubbed through Guardians of the Galaxy, which I said is also the part of its prime directive of What If, to force you to go back to the original films and do some research. But, you know, not like you said, I don't remember it being that dark, but gosh.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is super dark on a lot of levels because, I mean, it's about the relationship between Ego and Peter Quill. It's about the levels of family. I was actually speaking to my boy Iwate about this the other day, and he's like, 2 is like one of the most emotionally complete films in the MCU. You know, it's like a journey that the characters go on because they're all in different places at one point in the beginning of the film, and then they all end in a different point where they're all back unified as a family. It's a dope, you know, a lot of people sleep on it, but some people hated that movie. And you know, it is what it is.
In the concept of time, space, and reality, we end up on Earth at Wakanda in the year 1988, just like how when it got Peter somewhere in Middle America in 1988.
Yep.
This show, I just wanted to make this point, that this show is giving us a lot more than just swapping out characters in the story, right? Like, I want that to be very clear because some people's like, oh, they're not doing anything new or creative. No. What they're doing, like, they're doing new characterizations of these characters. They are essentially giving them new decision trees and new thought processes to how they move. And it's all reimaginations. And not just that, they are still, especially apparent with this episode, they are still including the values of those characters and how they normally would move, but in a new mantle. So we saw with Sharon Carter, who she is as a person intrinsically is still there. And then she gets the super soldier serum, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we know, super soldier serum just makes you more of what you already are.
Yep.
She just, you know, it's just like, it's not like it's just all of a sudden this person's like evil or good or anything like that. It's whatever was always kind of there within them. Their core is, their essence is still there. However, they're placed in different scenarios.
And that's going to be interesting, like you said, because this episode really is about the whole nature versus nurture argument. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to be interesting to see if that holds true in episodes that we've seen preview, like when they show Killmonger teaming up with Tony Stark.
Right.
You know, is that just because, like, as we've pointed out on views and on everything at the beginning, Tony Stark is definitely hella grimy. So if he met the wrong person at that time, and meeting Killmonger at that time might be just that wrong person. So we'll see how that plays out.
Deep grimy by that time.
It might, yeah. Too grimy ass, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this T'Challa episode, I will say I felt it took a very positive Star Trek-like approach to the future. And Ben, I mean, you mentioned it on a previous show how you've always noticed that the future is always like dark and apocalyptic and all this other stuff. There's some catastrophe that happens, but it's at least lately, there's very few stories where like shit is cool. Everything's not to say that every single thing is perfect, but generally speaking, people are happy or driving towards happiness. And you see that. And it seems all thanks to, as I call him, T'Challa Lord, that like a lot of people are happy or moving towards a space of happiness. Like they're using technology and knowledge to promote good and to try to end suffering and to try to bring people together. And even as we see later when they're in that, I call it the club, but it was in the club with all the races, like you saw like damn near every race in the world, in the universe, in the galaxy there. And everyone's drinking, having a good time, relaxing, and just the stories that they were telling, like to the fact that T'Challa Lord got Thanos to change his mind. That was like I was on my, because I've watched the episode 3 times, but on the first run I was just like, yo, like I was taken aback by that. And it's just like, is that, would you say that's an evangelism of T'Challa as the character and because of Chadwick Boseman? Or would you say that's just truly indicative of the heart of who this character is?
Ooh, that's a really good question right there. I think it's a bit of both. You know, I think I'd have to go with a bit of both there, because one thing about this episode is like it opens with Korath, right? Is that Korath finding Star-Lord abducting stealing this orb.
Right.
And Korath asked him, who are you? Which he asked a variation of in the first, you know, in Guardians. But that also who are you theme is something that permeates through Black Panther. Like, that was the main theme of Black Panther. Who are you? And in Black Panther, T'Challa is still finding out who he really is. And by the end of Black Panther, he's this character that we see in this film. But I mean, in this episode. But we didn't get to see the 20 or so years that he spent with Yondu and with the Ravagers, going on all those adventures, becoming this, you know, like, Black Panther, at least at the end of the first film, but not further along in his journey. So yeah, Black Panther would always be that character who will bring, especially once he grows up and accepts who he is. So yeah, I think it's a little bit of the evangelism and a lot more of just Black Panther of who he is and who T'Challa is.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
You see T'Challa's influence in this episode, not just with Thanos. I mean, you see it with Thanos and his relationship with Nebula and Thanos and his relationship with the whole universe. But you also see that in just all the different ways that he changes things, either subtly or on a large scale, just by being with the Ravagers instead of Star-Lord being there. Like,
I mean,
your man get teeth.
He got the teethus, right? For T'Challa Lords, for his name to permeate across the galaxy like that, to see the impact he's had, that's monumental.
Yes. Amazingly.
And obviously the complete opposite of what we see in Guardians of the Galaxy with Peter Quill, Star-Lord, because with that whole Korath scene, what's his name?
Korath.
Korath. Yeah, he's like, who?
Yes.
You know, that's always been like this long time meme now. Like, who the hell are you? Like, what have you done to change, you know, whether for good or bad? Like, what have you actually done? What was your impact? So to see that T'Challa, doesn't matter where he, at least this is what this is intimates, right? Doesn't matter where you place him, T'Challa makes an impact.
Yeah. And we're going to get into it because this episode is, oh my God, like, the last episode had some Easter eggs and stuff, but this episode has so many, whether they're visual, whether things people are referencing when they're talking, all the different characters we get to see, all the different weapons, etc. But like, one that just effed me up, and I didn't even get it till I'm watching YouTube, and I can't remember which video it was to shout them out, but as he's leaving with Yondu, with the orb, he makes a reference. He's like, because I'm sitting there trying to figure out, yo, what happened to the orb, right? Because the orb they take has the Power Stone in it.
Yeah.
And then it's never referenced again for the rest of the episode. So I'm like, yo, what happened to that? But what happens to it is they say, as they're walking away, he's like, we could do this or that. He's like, yeah, but wouldn't you rather take it to the Kalorians, I think they're called, something, I'll get to them, and let it power their dying star. So that's what happens to the Power Stone in this universe. It goes to power a dying star and save this race of people who are from the Marvel comic books. They come from the ROM comic books from the 1970s ROM Space Knight. Long story I won't get into right here. But the Kalorians, I don't know, whatever, are a race of cat people. Black Panther saves the cat people in space.
How cute.
Yeah. And just one of the, I mean, Dane references in this episode.
Oh, like, there was wild references galore. And obviously the Black Panther references, you know, all this stuff, the visual, as you mentioned, the audio cues, they were all over the place. And also this episode I felt had a lot of elements of heist movies, like Ocean's 11, where you have all the different players of your team that do different things. You have the heavy, you have the tech person, you have this, you have that. So I just thought it was really cool.
Yep. Also on that, on the Ocean's 11, it also references Ant-Man, which is another heist movie which referenced Ocean's 11.
Yep.
When Nebula first gives T'Challa the plan, they start playing some of the music that's similar to the music in Ant-Man when my man's is always running down the plan and telling the story through all the different voices.
Like that chase music, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Scooby-Doo chase music, as they call it.
Yep. Yeah. So the references are on every level. We'll get into some more of them right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. The one line that the Watcher says is different in the beginning that I want to mention, I thought was really cold, really cool. What you call destiny is just an equation, a product of variables. Right place, right time, and in some instances, the wrong place at the wrong time. And he says this just as the Ravagers abduct T'Challa. And the reason why I thought that was cold is because it reminds me of what you say about 4D beings. You know, if the Watcher is one of these 4D beings, just the fact that, like, we make I mean, there are civilizations built on the concept of destinies and religions and all sorts of things. And it's like such a, for a lot of people, such a holy thing. And then for this 4D being looking at our comic book, he's just like, it's just an equation.
And while
it's just math.
And while I do believe he's 1,000% correct in that idea that the world is just math, I believe in it being powered by, you know, some type of godlike being that, while not being the thing that most people think of, like it's sitting there like, oh, you did this today, Ben, up, going to hell. You know, I think of it more as just a being of energy and love, and that's what the universe is powered on. And I feel like math proves that in a way, but that's a whole nother longer story and a lot of stuff we can get into one day. But right now, well, let's focus on this. And yeah, I do love that shout out. That line was cold-blooded. And it's also similar to what He Who Remains tells Loki and Sylvie in the final episode. And when you look in the background in He Who Remains' room, he has a bunch of non-linear equations on all of his walls because everything is just one
literal
big
figurative
long equation.
Non-linear.
Non-linear.
There you go.
Yeah, everything is just math, folks, at the bottom of it all. Shout out to Terrence Howard, you know what I mean?
Big math. Big math.
Main.
Quick math.
Yeah.
And our next theme is another line from The Watcher and also drives the
Hold on. Is Terrence Howard going to be in What If? Please, God.
Yo, I told y'all, I think now that they've revealed, because of Loki and they've revealed the TVA and Nexus events and diverging timelines, they got to reveal him. I mean, the TVA pruned him.
I mean, in some way, you know, like
justice for Rhodey 1.0.
He don't even have to be Rhodey again, but just in some way, let him be.
No, I
what
want
if.
The nigga to be Rhodey just so he could come. Hey, man, say, man, I don't understand, man, why it happened to me, man. Why I got pruned, man? Come on. No.
I got pruned, man.
I wouldn't accept anything. I wouldn't accept anything else. Not to say that they haven't recast characters before, but it was when, and in fact, oh my God, the fucking MCU is a multiverse in and of itself. Prior to Fox getting them, prior to them getting Fox and all this other stuff, there's all these different fucking versions of niggas. I want Rhodey 1.0 to come in and just fuck shit up. I really do.
My man did try and bang on them for more money though, so it might be a like.
and why the fuck not? I don't blame him for that.
True.
Now, was it smart? The timing smart to bang on them for more money? Probably not. Maybe should have waited until you got a couple of movies in and your character mattered a bit more. But I'm not mad at it.
Yeah,
I understand.
I ain't mad. He was the biggest star at the time. You know, that
I don't
facts.
Agree, but you know,
yeah, you know,
it is what it is.
At the
that
time,
being said,
then yeah,
let's go into the next theme, which is also mentioned by The Watcher.
Choices. It's all you
choices.
Know. Destiny is just an equation.
He says, is your destiny determined by your nature or by the nature of your world?
Mm.
Once again, cold. It also reminds me of a slightly different, but on along the same path, the nature versus nurture argument, they say.
Pretty much the same argument.
Sure. Yep. And then I put also as the second part of this, T'Challa fixes everything. Because this is just the vibe I got the entire episode. So T'Challa's nature, even in this world, continues to be that of a man of a people. He still seems, he gives off very regal vibes. Even when Korath, you know, is first of all, is on his D-I-C-K. Like, even though he's on it, he still treats him like super royalty and all this other stuff. But T'Challa still has a righteous approach in everything he does, even in thievery. Like, he is deliberately stealing things, but as they say, he's stealing from, or as Korra said, from the powerless, stealing from the powerful and giving to the powerless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's later on, you know, obviously he's Robin Hood, and even apparently T'Challa taught that to Yondu, like, you know, this is all related to the what Robin Hood does, you know, steal from the rich, give to the poor. And everybody respects T'Challa. Again, you saw that. I play the scenes. I put in Guardians of the Galaxy and this episode, like, on the second watch, and I put it side by side and played both scenes. And, like, almost to the letter, you see them when that same scene where you see Korra standing there and he says, you know, I'm Star-Lord, or he just shows his face. And the whole who versus the revered, adoration, enamoring, like, he was really on him in this show.
As he should be. I mean, my man is out here stealing the Power Stone to fuel a dying star. And that's just one of his many accomplishments. Like, you know, he's already stopped Thanos from destroying half of the universe.
Yeah. And T'Challa is very level-headed. He himself, like, he believes in therapy, counseling. Like, he talks about that, how he's trying to get Nebula and Thanos into counseling. And even his own disagreements or conversations with Yondu, you see that it's a healthy relationship. They may have a disagreement. They give their pieces, their viewpoints. They talk it out. They come to a consensus or agreement or whatever it is. It's healthy. Versus in Guardians of the Galaxy, right away, what is Yondu doing? F you, this and that, you know, calling him out his name. How dare you? I'm putting bounties on Star-Lord's head. Like,
I should have ate you, you know?
Yeah, like, I should have ate you. I should have ate you and your mama. Like, it's all sorts of things that it's just like, okay, it's, you know, let's talk it out. But it was just a marked difference between the two lives.
One thing I did find interesting, we talked about this a little earlier, is that this is like a T'Challa who is after the Black Panther film at the very least. He's that advanced, at least, in his character development.
He's more advanced, absolutely.
Yeah. But the T'Challa in the Black Panther film, as I've always pointed out, benefits from the women around him. Mm-hmm. And this T'Challa, while he might have had them as a child, he does not have them in his adulthood when he, you know, which in the Black Panther film is where we saw him make this growth. So did this version of T'Challa, like, just grow up faster, you know, as a kid than our version of T'Challa? Is that what it is? Like,
I mean, this version definitely has home training compared to Sacred Timeline Star-Lord, so.
I mean, I'm not talking about Peter Quill versus T'Challa. That's a,
yeah, you know, but there's no, you're just talking there about Sacred Timeline T'Challa versus this T'Challa? I think it just goes back to what I said about this just being in his nature.
Yeah.
And as the Watcher said, is your destiny determined by your nature? Like, yes, his experiences and was heavily influenced by the women around him, as we saw in the Black Panther film. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's certain aspects of him that were still within him as a person. Yep. Like, some people are intrinsically one way or another, right? That's just your particulars as an individual. And obviously, your the way you grow up, your lineage, your parentage, all that stuff helps accumulate into you. But again, it's just certain things that are just part of your being. I personally feel that that's just what it is.
Yeah. You are who you were when you got here, you know?
You are who you were. And whether it ends up being all bad or all good.
Top layer.
Right. Hove. It's just a top layer. There you go, Ben.
Yeah, it's Hove, you know? There it is. You got a line for everything. Jigga Man, you heard?
And we see this in this line that T'Challa says, where he says, or T'Challa Lord, no treasure is worth as much as the good that can be done with it. Mm. And that's, you know, obviously a very selfless view. And again, the noble approach to thievery.
Mm-hmm.
The Robin Hood approach.
That's a very great line.
Yeah.
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 Most
shout
impressive.
Shout
outs
to, is his name AC? Yeah. Shout outs to AC Bradley, who's the head writer for the What's If series, or at least for season one. He's been doing the thing.
Yeah, doing the thing. Because even on that, I was thinking about how normally we do our plot breakdowns of these episodes. You know, when we were doing Loki and WandaVision, make sure you go, and Winter Soldier, make sure you go check out all of that on youtube.tv/forallnerds.
Yep.
And I was thinking about that. You know, we do plot breakdowns on every episode, and it's near damn impossible to do them for What If, and that speaks to the quality of the writing as well, because they're introducing so much. Like, even though you're familiar with these characters, like, if we open an episode and I was like, yo, and then the Collector uses all the weapons of the galaxy to try and kill T'Challa, you'd be like, what? If you hadn't seen the episode, you know, you would have, what? Benicio del Toro is trying to kill T'Challa? Like, you know, it wouldn't make no sense to you. But this being the What If, where they're introducing all these new concepts and using familiar concepts, but then flipping them on their ear and giving you a satisfying story. And as we saw in this episode, like, the first episode was more of a character flip, you know, insert Peggy, whoop, whoop, she goes through the same Steve thing, she gets put to the future. This is some completely different wild stuff with a lot of different references, but still telling a satisfying, complete story and leaving you wanting more at the end. So, you know.
And you'll have at least four episodes, because if you look at the IMDb, Chadwick is credited with four episodes of What If.
And the question is, are they going to continue this story, or will it be different versions of T'Challa in each of those things? And I'm hoping
I'm hoping for a bit of both.
A bit of both. I'd like to see a continuation of what happens after this episode.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like obviously I love hearing Chadwick Boseman's voice. I love the fact that he was able to reprise his character before he passed. In a way, it's just like you said, I felt like this particular story was a very complete story. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be more Yaya, rainbows and unicorns. Like, oh, he's still doing good. He's doing good. I would also like to see different approaches as well. But there is one group that's not necessarily happy in this universe.
And it's going to end for everyone. Like, this episode also ended with the more traditional end to a What If comic book, where it's like, well, that was great, but because of that, the universe dies. Because that's what people are kind of missing at the end of this episode. I don't think missing, but, you know.
But we don't know.
I mean, maybe T'Challa can still fix this. But Ego, you know, teams up with Peter Quill, and there's no Yondu to save Peter Quill from this.
True. So what does Peter Quill become? What does he get groomed, well, he groomed
either,
into?
I mean, he either gets ate by Ego, or he, you know, Ego, you know, and him team up to rule the world. I mean, the universe.
So it's going to be a greater threat.
Yes. I mean, that's right. That's what the Watcher says at the end of this episode. Well, that leads to the doom of the universe. You know, like, he says it. Like, that's the end of that. Well, you know.
Well, he didn't say that verbatim. That leads to the doom.
He said it could end to the end of the, you know, universe. That could lead to the end of the universe. Yeah. Which it could, because that was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He was teaming up with him. He would get his power from him. And if he wasn't down with it, he would just absorb the power back into him. And thusly, you know, keep him moving his ego. And that's nothing this episode did, I guess, confirm. Because I've been debating this. Is Ego truly a Celestial who we have finally seen in their true forms in the Eternals trailer? And they actually showed up in Guardians, actually in their true forms as well. What am I talking about? You know, shout outs. I know. Shout out to everybody, twitch.tv/forallnerds. I know they were in the Guardians
movie
too.
We see you.
Yeah, we see you and love you. But yes, so they said the Celestial Ego in this episode. So that was something where I was like, oh, okay, he is actually considered to be one of them. I wasn't sure because he kind of got served in Guardians too. I don't see the Celestials and the Eternals getting served.
Not like that.
Not like that. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that was a little bit of confirmation right there.
Yeah, a few minutes ago I mentioned that there's at least one group that's not having a good time in T'Challa universe. Which group is that, Ben? I mean,
the Skrulls.
Yep.
Oh wow, I wasn't sure. I mean, there are a few people, but yeah, the Skrulls. I mean,
but
the Skrulls
particularly, because they're mentioned a few times or implied a few times.
Yeah, and they're getting hated, but they're also having a good time. Like in this universe, their home world was not destroyed, which happens not only in the MCU but in the Marvel universe. Galactus eats their home world.
Right.
So they stay taking major L's as far as their home world. And so in the MCU, they're more of like this refugee, trying to make it.
Them very sympathetic in Captain Marvel.
Just trying to make it out here, you know, just trying to live. While in this universe, while their home world isn't destroyed, they become more of the Skrull-like warring race that we've seen in the Marvel comic book, where they are a problem for everyone they encounter.
And in the MCU, as you said, they've made the Skrull very sympathetic and made the Kree more of the warmongers.
Also, though,
depending on the story, they switch roles a lot.
Yes. And also in the MCU, in this, not the MCU, in this T'Challa Lord version.
And What If?
Drax the Destroyer, or Drax the Bartender, is still talking about how T'Challa saved his world from a Kree invasion. So it's not that the Kree are... This might be the more traditional universe where it's the Kree and the Skrulls are just going at it all the time.
And fucking up everybody else's shit.
As they go along. The Kree-Skrull War is like a big classic in Marvel Comics. You know, that's like one of the first big ones in Marvel Comics.
All right.
Yeah.
Next up for our themes, we have mirrors and some real life commentary in there, and we're going to see that throughout every episode we encounter on the What If series. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, we don't have to mention every last one of them. Some of them are super, super obvious, but some we have things like, instead of the Star-Lord Gamora connection and that relationship that forms, we have the T'Challa-Lord Nebula connection.
Love it.
Loved it. And first of all, I love seeing Nebula in this light. Oh. Like, in this version of Nebula, all her organic parts weren't stripped away from her from Thanos, so she was able to do things like grow hair.
Yep.
And have more. Besides, like, the eye, she generally is mostly organic. At least it appears to be.
Let me tell y'all, for longtime listeners of this show and for all nerds, they know how much I love Nebula and Karen Gillian's, like...
I love the way her cadence, even how she speaks as Nebula.
Yes.
That shit is perfect. It's like, it's the very specific cadence to how she it's like a slight stutter.
Yes.
But also very deliberate tone.
Yes.
And it's consistent.
She just destroys it in every time. Like, I'll watch Guardians again and again just for her in those movies because she is just so good. I'll watch anything. And I love how she returns and gives you just like, Chadwick gave you a different reading of T'Challa. She gives mm-hmm. you a completely different reading of Nebula while still being true to the Nebula we know, but showing you a Nebula who has not had her father's influence. Like, her last line in this episode, the "oh, dad," was like that one. Yeah. That's such great writing because as you see in the beginning of this episode, she doesn't even like referring to him as her father.
Big guy. And yep. then she even says he's lucky he gets that.
Yes. And then by the end of the episode, she's like, "oh, dad."
And again, it was so wild to watch because I'm just like, here's this purple teddy bear, like, you know, the same guy that they're making throughout the episode genocide jokes about, but he's all doing like dad jokes and shit. And as you said, here comes Nebula, like with the typical teenage, "oh, dad, you're embarrassing me" type of shit. So like, I was just like, yo, where the fuck are we? Like, what is going on? But it was still interesting to watch. Like, what if they didn't have such a fucked up relationship? Or as I said, they did in the beginning, but he changed.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even that he changed, it's more, I mean, he does change. They both change in this episode. They both change to meet each other more because it's like she's still thinking of him as, I mean, he might have done something to her. He might be responsible for her eye being gone in this. He definitely has not done near as much he did to her in the main universe where she can't even grow hair anymore.
Facts.
You know, so their relationship has still been at a point because T'Challa gets to them and saves them. I think that's one of the things that even maybe inspires him to, you know, to change Thanos or helps him change Thanos, since he probably mm-hmm. met Nebula first and was like, oh, no, because they definitely have a relationship. You know, there's right. more than just it's even further along than Star-Lord.
T'Challa, Lord, and Nebula. Absolutely. They was flirting and going on. And we know.
Yeah. And there's so much subtle shit like. She shows him the eye. That's the only person she shows is the eye is to T'Challa.
Like, willingly. And yeah. then until the collector says a joke about her, like, yep. tries to go in on her mm-hmm. and points to her eye, you know, yep. in a disparaging way.
Yeah, but she keeps, you know, pulling up because she's, you know, with him. She can be vulnerable with him.
True. Yeah. True.
And then, I mean, she calls him Cha-Cha. Like, come on now.
That shit. I was dying. I was like, really, dude? Cha-Cha. Another point I want to make that's similar to what you brought up about the relationship between Thanos and Nebula. Nebula gets the Gamora treatment here just in terms of the favoritism. Like, we mm-hmm. see in the and I call the main MCU the Sacred Timeline, I interchange it. But in the Sacred Timeline, we see, regardless of how Gamora truly feels about, you know, doesn't really fuck with Thanos like that, she gets the favoritism, right? She gets the implied love or the implied attention and all this other stuff while Gamora, in the Sacred Timeline. Whereas, you know, typically Nebula gets a short end of the stick. And what if it's reversed? Mm. And in fact, not just reversed, we don't even see Gamora at all. So we have no idea what she's doing, if she's even around or alive or what's going on.
Mm.
So something to think about.
I think why we don't see Gamora in this universe is because of the fact that Thanos has stopped from his rampage probably a lot earlier. So remember, he goes on a rampage and kills off half of Gamora's people, and that's how he gets Gamora. So that's why. But that
did he stop before he could get her? Yes. But that doesn't make sense because Nebula's grown. Nebula at this around the same time, and so they're basically Nebula and Gamora is basically like around the same age, right?
Yeah, I would assume, but
or
who knows?
Appearance wise,
you know, who knows, right? He might have had her for like 50 years, and she might just be ancient.
True,
you know.
I mean, he did make Nebula mostly a robot. So
yeah, so it could be all.
She
kind
could
of
be,
things. But
yeah,
I think that's why we don't see Gamora in this episode.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Some more mirrors or parallels here. In the Guardians of the Galaxy film, Kareena, remember the slave, the collector's slave that or enslaved alien that he has, the red-faced girl. Mm-hmm. In the film, she ends up dying after she touches the Power Stone because she refuses to be a slave to the Collector anymore. Mm-hmm. She feels like that's her way of getting out and essentially commit suicide. Mm. In What If, T'Challa's words, once again, T'Challa's words continue to inspire people, inspire Thanos, inspired all these different civilizations, and it inspires Karina to help him trap the Collector in the very end. And she ends up unleashing all of the Collector's prisoners on the Collector, which I also saw as a parallel to how the Grandmaster was killed in Ragnarok. At the very end, all of the Grandmaster's subjects were essentially released and just went in on him.
Mm. Yeah, good catch there.
Yeah. And towards T'Challa's line here, he says, history had never looked kindly on those that lock men in cages. Mm. Which, real life commentary for all sorts of things you could think of. and all sorts of real life, you know, situations that have happened.
Yeah, about that.
About that.
Also, I'm not sure of the race of that woman, but that's also the same race of women who Peter Quill is sleeping with. And I think that's the first Guardians. Yeah, that is the first Guardians.
That is the first Guardians.
Meet him. Yep. And he escapes on his ship and she's in the ship. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that you were even here.
The joke I had mentioned earlier about, again, I believe Taserface said this, that the all humans look alike to me. Mm-hmm. Again, another funny joke about the, you know, ethnicity and race and things like that, because, you know, what does, and we're talking about on a Star Trek scale, none of that matters, right? People are not really looking at ethnicity and race. Like, they, yeah, you can say you're a Klingon, you're this, you're that, but like, they're beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. As Star Trek likes to say. And even when Yondu shows a picture of Peter Quill, who's clearly a little white boy, next to a smiling, you know, T'Challa, so cute. He's like, they don't look different to you. Like, I just thought that was really funny.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, two ear holes, two eye holes. But that's that is something like, that is something we talked about on this show and how, you know, toxic, you know, whiteness has created the idea of race. You know, of like separating a human being, which is one race of, you know, creature to any
creature
other.
On this earth, on this planet.
There are cows, there are humans, you know, we don't say, look at that black cow over there, look at that white cow, you know. Uh-oh, white cow got to get all the money. You know, it's, you know, it doesn't work like that.
He said it don't work like that.
You know, better put these black cows to work and let the white cows over there chill out, you know.
Please stop.
You know, you know, arrest all the black cows, throw them in prison. You know, no, it doesn't work like that. You know, and so that's just speaking to that. Like, these aliens look at it like, dog, these are all humans. What are you talking about? You know, there's different
races. It don't
matter
to us.
Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, what's that? You know?
Yeah. We see a mirror of the scene in Guardians of the Galaxy where it's actually towards the end of the film, which is interesting, just about this, how they took elements of Guardians of the Galaxy and pieced it to make this What If episode. But towards the end, there's a scene of Yondu going against like Korath's, you know, guards or his troop. And he uses that Yaka arrow, you know, the arrow where he whistles, to defeat all the surrounding. Yeah, that shit goes so far. I've always thought that's one of the coldest weapons in all of the MCU. Like, to sit there and just whistle. You don't have to fucking move, and you're just fucking whistling a tune, and you just murking, like, getting, like, 50 bodies in what, 30 seconds or less? That shit is fire. That shit is so fucking fire.
As far as I know, that was an improvement over Yondu's character in the comics. Because Yondu, I know, He had a bow that when he shot you, you know, it was going to catch you. That was it, you know. But he actually, you know, had the bow with it. It wasn't like, you know, he just chilled out and whistled as he as he worked.
And then you just sitting there like a G, you know, you doing that
stance. While you work.
Ooh. So, yeah.
Oh, that's a T-shirt right there.
In Guardians of the Galaxy, again, it's a little bit towards the end, but we see that scene. And they do a similar scene in What If, which to comedic effect, when T'Challa first gets out the temple with Korath over his shoulder. And he's like, a Ravager never flies solo. He has to say it a couple times to get the help. But you see that happen again where everyone just takes the L.
Yes. Whistle while you twerk.
Whistle while you twerk, for real. Could you? Oh, we got to do that now. Yeah. We got to do Yondu doing whistle while you twerk. We have to. Just one other mirror I wanted to mention with T'Challa Lord, his mask that he could make appear over his face. Those eyes are purple instead of red, as we know in Guardians of the Galaxy. Star-Lord Peter Quill's eye masks are red, like going purple to, as we mentioned, there was all these like signifiers to Black Panthers. Purple is typically the color of, or the color scheme that has been generally associated with Wakanda, with Black Panther. We saw it with the purple carpet. Even on our own Crown Wakanda event, we had a purple carpet. So
there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And T'Challa Lord, his ship is named the Mandela, presumably after Nelson Mandela, whereas Peter Quill's ship is named the Milano, I believe after Alyssa Milano, the actor.
Yeah.
Or so, that's what
I've
read.
Yeah. No, it's Alyssa Milano. Okay, well, that's what you read. But yeah, Alyssa Milano was massive in the 80s when Peter Quill was a kid. She was a star on Who's the Boss. She's also in Commando, one of the greatest films ever made. So, that's why his ship is named, because he had a huge crush on her, obviously, like most people of the 80s age were loving some. Alyssa was a little baddie when she was young. You know what I mean? So, look, Who's the Boss? Ooh, yeah, I was loving me some Alyssa. But also, it's really dope that Mandela shout out is dope on a lot of levels, because at the time in 1988, Mandela was still in a South African prison. And not only that, as we know, the Wakandan language that they use in the film, the dialect is based on Xhosa. The South African.
Xhosa. It's with the clicks.
Yeah, with the click. It's Xhosa, yeah. Which is a South African tongue defined by its clicks. And that's one of the languages that was used to, that they're actually speaking. I think T'Chaka's father is speaking it in Civil War. I mean, T'Chaka is speaking it in Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chadwick had learned it himself. And so that's why they chose that language for a Civil War.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful. And that's just so dope that the Mandela, you know, and that's what Mandela speaks, so whoop, whoop, whoop. So the ship being Mandela, and the ship being even colored purple and gold instead of the blue and gold that the Milano was.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Let's get into the characters. As we've learned, most everyone who was in the film returns to the films, wherever these characters are. Presented themselves originally. Mm-hmm. Most of the same actors return to voice these animated versions of themselves, except for one. There was a slight controversy on Twitter like a week or two ago, where Dave Bautista, he mentions that Disney never even approached him to voice Drax.
And he was like, oh, bro, yeah, we did.
Did they?
Yeah, it's actually been cleared up since. They said that it was a misunderstanding. They reached out to his people. He was somewhere where he couldn't be reached, et cetera, et cetera. It just, you know, it wasn't one of them things where they didn't. No. They love him.
Because I was just like that, because I was like, everybody except for him was back. Everybody, even the most obscure characters.
Wow. Well, this one, I mean, no, they said they did reach out to him, and it just was. Because he doesn't want to do Drax after Guardians 3.
That's what he said.
At least physically, though, because he just feels he's too old to play the part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, T'Challa/Star-Lord/T'Challa Lord, as I've christened him, voiced by the legendary, rest in power always, Chadwick Boseman. We miss you. We love you. And it was great to, as I mentioned, great to hear his voice. It just felt very rich. Like, as we say about the animation is so alive and moving and warm. And even the vocal performances are very rich and always. I know some people, they were getting very emotional because they were just like, you know, like, damn. Like, because you know that after you hear him, after you know, the next few episodes or whatever, you may not hear from him again.
Yeah. So. And this, like you said, this is a performance and the animation to capture so many of Chadwick's expressions.
Yes.
And his feelings. And just the little subtle things, like when Drax, the bartender, grabs him up and he's like, take this picture with me. And he's like, no, that's a terrible picture. He's like, we got to take another. And Chadwick gets a little more angry. He's like, Yeah, just that little, all the subtleties in it. And like you said, the richness and just, you know, feeling like that T'Challa at his prime T'Challa, you know, with Chadwick is so good at doing that. Like, he was good at doing the T'Challa who didn't know who he is. But once, you know, Chadwick has that regalness to him, so
yes.
Yeah, you just are like, okay, yes, sir,
you know? And that keeps permeating in every one of his projects, and obviously with the prince, or the, you know, soon to be king here.
Yes.
And one, like what you just said, make me remember, like a lot of people don't know, a lot of times when with animation, they have the animators either in the studio or near the studio with the people doing the voice acting, or they'll mm-hmm. watch videos and look at pictures and stuff for the very point that you raised, that they tried to incorporate some of those facial expressions or particulars about that person. Mm-hmm. So there's even more of a connection. And especially if it's a known actor, like they are actor, I just use actor to mean men and women, but if it's a known actor, like and they do like a really good job about it, you can see that person kind of coming through a little bit, and it just gives it that little bit of extra special to it.
Yes.
Yeah. And in terms of this version of T'Challa, to me, he still moved like Black Panther. Even though he was the Ravager, like you saw it in the way he climbed up things, like when he was climbing up the scenery, it was very cat-like, Black Panther-like. When he was thrown around by the collector, the way he even landed, it was very much like all you had to do was draw the suit on him and he would have just been Black Panther.
And that's the question, because that means that he sipping on that herb, you know, the heart-shaped herb when he was a little kid, because, you know, he had all the moves of Black Panther without the heart-shaped herb, so.
All the moves. But you can say that's training, right?
Yes.
I mean, he was still trained when he was a kid. Like, how old was he when he was abducted? Like, 10?
Eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
Eight? 10, something like that.
He was already training by then. Yeah.
If you believe in the world of Pokemon, you're old enough to go explore the world at that point. So you're 10, get the fuck out the house. So, yeah. So he may have already had some of that instilled in him.
Oh, he was definitely already putting in that work, you know. Wakanda don't play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of putting in work, you know, there's a long tradition of Marvel heroes out here bodying mass amount of people, you know, and I gotta say, a lot of people probably died on nobody.
Oh, because of the ember, the Genesis embers being used to get the fuck out of there?
I mean, they definitely murked, you know, the, what do you call it? The, why can I not remember their name? Thanos' children.
The dark, I'll call it the dark brood, the black order.
Yeah, the dark brood. Yeah, wow. That works too. But yeah, the Black Order, two of them catch bodies right away. You know, Cole Obsidian and...
They deserved it.
But what about all of the collectors'
captains? Nah. Man, I ain't doing this old what about, man. Hey, collateral damage, son.
All right. But I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, them Embers of Genesis move very quickly and...
Did it envelop the entirety of nobody?
As you see them flying away.
I mean, nowhere?
Nobody. Yeah, as you see them flying away, there's like light glowing through his eyes. The embers are floating out of it. Nowhere, nobody might be returning to life from the embers of Genesis. But everybody in there is.
I didn't even think about that. Okay, in terms of continuation of a story, that's mm-hmm. an implication.
Definitely is a great, you know, if I was writing that, I'd definitely pick that up for the next thread because, yeah.
I legitimately forgot about it.
Yeah, and everybody on there probably caught a hot L unless they hopped in some ships. You know, there were a lot of ships in the collector's thing. Maybe they all got on one, but other than that.
But that would kill them? Just the growing of plants would kill them? Isn't it about life? Isn't those embers about life?
Yeah, but, you know, life also necessitates death, you know, like it's a cycle, you know, right? And, you know.
Facts.
A soul for a soul, as they say in Game of Thrones. Like, there's a lot of souls, you know, nobody's a big soul. I mean, nowhere is a big soul, you know, so it takes a lot.
Yondu, aka Mary Poppins. Mary Effin' Poppins, voiced by Michael Rooker. He comes back. You also have my boy Jamin Hansu, who returns as Korath in a very hilarious rendition of Korath, I have to say. Like, throughout the episode, he was just saying the wildest stuff, you know, like classic Star-Lord. And like he was just like a little kid, like, can I be your friend? Can I be with you? Like, it was, they poured it on so heavy, and it was just hilarious.
The Captain Genocide was my line.
The Captain Genocide. Like, he was so giddy to just be ridiculous. And you have to love when actors are love having fun like that, especially with characters that were the complete opposite from what they've played previously.
I also want to shout out Michael Rooker for doing it once again as Yondu, and that line where he said, I ain't leaving here without my kid. Like,
my kid, that line, yes.
Because, yeah, Yondu, you know, that's the galaxy moment that brings me to tears every time is, you know, he might be your father, but he ain't your daddy.
Daddy, boy. You know, that got me in the feels.
Every time I see it, it gets me. And so that was so reminiscent of that. I was right there. It was like, oh, he came back for Chadwick, you know. It's like, yeah.
And at least this time, Korath doesn't catch the bad one, because in Guardians of the Galaxy, he was killed. But he's alive here and chilling with the Ravagers, apparently.
Star-Lord murders him?
I don't know if Star-Lord did it, but he ended up getting killed by... He was potentially collateral damage, but he's definitely not alive.
Oh, damn.
Which I feel bad, because I was on a plane
definitely
watching...
Definitely not alive.
I was on a plane watching The Quiet Place 2. Yep. Spoiler alert. And fast forward like a minute if you don't want to hear this, but Jaime's on screen for like 2 minutes and dies. And I was just like, God damn, why bring him here? Why? What's the point? But
yeah,
whatever.
It was funny. I thought about watching The Quiet Place on the plane that I was on too, but I didn't have headphones, so I was just going to watch it with subtitles. But I was like, that kind of defeats the point of this movie,
the
right?
The movie's very quiet.
Yeah,
so
and I'm like, the movie's all about the sound editing and all that. So I was like, okay, I'll just wait. I'll catch this another time.
But I just, you know, that's an aside. I just wanted to mention that. Like, damn, Jaime. But anyway, you mentioned the great Karen Gillan as Nebula. Amazing job with the voice acting again. Josh Brolin comes back as Thanos. His voice is so distinctive. So as soon as he started talking, I'm like, that's Josh.
And also, I love that flip. You know, the flip that he does is so incredible, to do this different version of Thanos from the jump. As soon as he steps on the scene, it's like, what? You know, what are you talking about? And then, you know, his, like, some of his last lines when he's like, not crazy, mad.
And there's still, just like in Guardians of the Galaxy, there's still the jokes about him being a genocidal maniac. And he even tries to, like, rationalize and
over
says,
and over.
It's the most efficient.
Yeah.
You know, he says it with a smile, but he's, like, keeping to it.
And that's still reminiscent of his conversation with Doctor Strange in Infinity War. That's what he says to him. And Doctor Strange responds to him, it's genocide. You know, he says it's efficient, and he's like, no, it's genocide. And there's also, I mean, there's, like we said, there are so many shouts and shots in this episode. But one great one is when Cole Obsidian is coming down on him with his hammer, and Thanos grabs the hammer, and it's a shot-for-shot recreation of when Spider-Man saved Iron Man from Cole Obsidian in the same thing, with the same smile and like, the hey, I'm here, you know.
Like, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's so
hilarious. Dumbass. I mean,
yeah, Thanos is just, they killed it with him in this episode.
And as mentioned, most of the people who play the live action versions of these characters come back, as we hear Benicio del Toro for the Collector.
That was Kurt Benicio?
That was Benicio. Wow. I didn't know. I didn't think it was, because it sounded a little different. But
yeah.
I looked in IMDb and it's him.
He's playing him differently. That's a shout out to him again. He
and
did
also,
that.
This is Buff the Collector.
Yeah, like, so that's not, what I'm saying. He plays him like that, you know. He plays him different, like.
He played him like he was kind of on his Sephiroth shit a little bit. So I said, "Oh, okay."
Yeah,
he's serious right now.
Sexy genocide.
Sexy genocide. Kurt Russell comes back as Ego. John Kanai as T'Chaka, T'Challa's birth father, and even Danai Gurira with that literally like 2 second. I don't even know she
doesn't
like
speak,
something.
Does she?
She speaks or makes a noise or something, but she's there.
Wow.
She's credited as with Okoye. What else? Seth Green reprises Howard the Duck.
Shout out to Howard the Duck. For those that don't know, Howard showed up in Guardians in one of the end credit scenes as well. But Howard the Duck is a legendary character from Marvel Comics. And Steve Gerber, that's the creator of Howard the Duck, who I just want to shout out because Steve is an effing genius. And it seems like this silly-ass character, Howard the Duck, but it's an incredible comic book. It's like so ahead of its time. It predates everything like Deadpool and all these just ridiculous tapes on comic books and being in a ridiculous universe, and just everything about Howard the Duck is a, you know, great. And Seth Green is another, you know, great dude. So I love that he returned to do Howard the Duck. And I just love saying the name Howard the Duck.
I mean, it's still very silly to me because I don't have that background in history. And, like, I refuse to learn more about it. But
Howard the Duck is amazing.
He keeps appearing, so I feel like I have to learn.
Yeah, like, just, you know, go online, read some old Steve Gerber Howard the Duck comics. I'm not sure if they're collected or anything, but check them out if y'all want to know more about Howard the Duck. The movie is, you know, we know what that is. Ass. You know, let's not go there. Let's not go there. We're talking about the comics, and we're talking about the MCU. That's it. Yeah.
Rounding out our review are the Easter eggs, inspiration, and music.
So many of them.
So many of them, especially in the collector's collection.
Yes.
From the actual like visuals that you see, like direct visuals you see of the people, places, and things, to the implied like silhouettes of characters. There's all sorts of things going on here. Like, for example, in one storage cube, when he's about to fight T'Challa Lord, he has, that opens up the weapons, he has Captain America's shield and Thor's Mjolnir.
How does he get the second one?
How and who defeated whom? Like, how did that happen? Who delivered that to him? Malekith's dagger, which is the Dark Elf, like the Lord of the Dark Elf or whatever, which in the MCU was actually taken from Malekith by Frigga. This is just the way it looks, because the rest of the weapons could be anything. There's one hammer-looking like weapon that resembles Boastful Loki's hammer that we saw in the Loki show. There even may be the Muramasa blade, which is related to Wolverine. It's a blade in there that kind of resembles a samurai sword in there / scimitar. I don't know, but it could be the Muramasa blade. This one I didn't necessarily agree with. There could be maybe half of Thanos' blade in there. I'm just like, but Thanos is alive. Wouldn't he still have his stuff? I don't know.
Who knows?
And in that same weaponry, in that weapon case that it flips over, the Collector actually takes out Hela's helmet. And apparently, at least in this version, Hela's helmet is what activates those necro sword powers, those daggers that come out of nowhere that he can just throw at will.
Yeah, and he actually does the same move that she does when she puts on the helmet and throws
it. Yeah, it's just like,
look how sexy
luxurious. I am. Look how luxurious. It is a luxurious-ass helmet.
It is quite luxurious, yeah.
Yeah. The ships, you see, when T'Challa is running through, you see a bunch of ships in the background. I believe one of them looks like Captain Marvel's prototype jet.
Yep.
There's the Grandmaster ship in there.
Yep. There's party ship. Shout out to the party ship.
The party ship. There's a Zandarian ship. You see the Wakandan spaceship. What else are you seeing there potentially, Ben?
You see, Zandarians, Nova Corps star type ship that they use to stop Big Dude ship, Ronan the Accuser. We also see the Ant-Man quantum ship. And also, in another reference to Ant-Man, we might see a Targat. What are them things called? The
The Tardashians?
I can't remember right now.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that's funny.
They're them little microscopic animals.
Oh. Tardigrade.
There we go. Not Tardashians. Yeah, Tardigrades. Yeah, we see a Tardigrade that
The
little bears that we saw in the Quantum Realm when he shrunk down, and they were even bigger than him because that's how small he was. So we see the Ant-Man.
Didn't they try to eat him?
Yeah, I think they tried to eat him. So we see the Ant-Man quantum ship, plus we see a Tardigrade in his collection. We see the Necrocraft, which are the ships that the Dark Elves were flying in Thor the Dark World. We see a prototype Quinjet that we've seen in some of the Avengers films. And shout outs to all my Star Wars heads. And once again, twitch.tv/forallnerds, because I know you've already said this. The X-Wing is up in the background. Yes, it is. Stop denying it. Accept it.
It's like a representation of an X-Wing. It's like outright, excuse me, an X-Wing, but I guess, girl.
And for all our super geeks out there, we know that there's a long history of referencing these universes, especially between the Lucas and Spielberg universes. Like you've seen, I think R2-D2 is in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's also in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And there's et cetera, little references like that. So yeah, this... Me, myself, when I saw it, I was like, but it is that representation. You know, they put it there for a reason.
Fine, whatever.
Yep.
Continue, sir.
Okay, let's see. There's also references to the Dark Elves and Frost Giants being in his collection. He also, we talked about this, he probably killed our man Korg and chopped off his arm.
That was so bad. He said, I hacked the arm off a terribly chatted Cronin.
Yes.
And I didn't catch it until the second time around. I said... He's talking about my boy Korg.
That he is.
Who we met in Thor Ragnarok, who befriended Thor.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was
his arm.
Yeah, that was worse than that dude trolling him on the online, boy. Murdered that man and took his arm and then used it to fight. And also, I'm pretty sure this is a reference. The embers of Genesis, which were used to terraform the planets and nowhere in this episode and murder a bunch of people, where I feel like as a shout out to Star Trek, The Search for Spock. It's the third Star Trek film in the original series where Spock is dead at this point, and there is a device used called Genesis, which terraforms planets and is used to resurrect Spock in this film and terraform a planet. So I'm like, embers of Genesis, terraforming embers, Genesis.
Probably.
And, you know, everybody's seen those films. That's like, I was telling Tatiana, those are like my three favorite Star Trek films, that trilogy right there. You know, Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, and The Voyage Home are like, that's, I'll put that up against any trilogy out there. Those are classics.
That's what's up.
Yep.
I love this, the fact that they incorporated the literal argument we've and other people have had for years about why Thanos didn't just come from a place of abundance. Like, you know, he was just, I got to get rid of half everyone, it's more efficient. Or why don't you just reallocate the resources so that everyone has what they need? And apparently that's the argument or the conversation that T'Challa bred, a.k.a. T'Challa Lord, had with him, and how he got Thanos to change his mind.
Like I said, I think it's because of that relationship with Nebula that really led, you know, once again, the women into T'Challa's
life. Oh, you dated my daughter?
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, he dating his daughter, you know, you got to be like, yo, dad, though, you know what I mean? What if you just did it like this, though, Pops? You know what I mean?
Why have you hit it in this way?
Yeah, you know, like,
But like you said, the influence of women, though.
Yeah, the influence of women, you know, and especially the influence of a dope-ass woman like Nebula.
You know.
Respect.
It was a quick Easter egg of Yondu confusing Robin Leach for Robin Hood.
Yes.
Which is interesting because back, this is the 80s or early 90s, but Robin Leach, he was Lifestyle of the Rich and Famous.
Yes, he was.
And he basically went around like showing all like
the cribs.
Nasty, okay, showing all the disgusting wealth of all the people around him.
This is
right?
Robin Leach.
Was he himself rich?
I mean, I'm sure he hosted a TV show, so I don't know. I'm sure he was papered up before that. I've never figured out who Robin Leach is. I just knew him as a kid as, this is Robin Leach, and this is Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Okay.
That's probably a terrible Robin Leach impersonation, but, you know, best I can do right now.
We saw Cosmo the Space Dog. We saw him in Guardians of the Galaxy as well. Who is this character, Ben?
Cosmo the Space Dog is a character who's been around for a minute. He was a Guardian of the Galaxy. He is a telepathic dog.
Okay. I think LSD. He's Russian.
I think he's Russian, right? He's Cosmo.
The LSD has been
dog.
Activated. He's definitely Russian. He's a cosmonaut. But the LSD has been activated.
Yeah. The drugs were heavy at Marvel. Look, the Marvel bullpen...
were flowing freely.
Were flowing freely, as they should be.
Yeah, okay. You know,
hey, don't do drugs, kids. Give them
unless
to
you're
me.
Writing a Marvel comic.
Well,
all right.
What Pharaoh wants say, give me all the roses. Give me all the drugs. No, okay.
And then in terms of like music or sounds and audio, like I said, we heard like the I don't know how to explain it. It's like not wind chimes, but like kind of a hollow wind chime esque sound that's in Black Panther. Kind of that Rafiki thing. Well, no, there's two things. That again, it's like a wind chime. Then we heard the whoop whoop whoop, like you said, with the which is usually
those are drums. The wind chime drum type sound. The doo doo doo.
Yeah, doo doo
doo doo. Yeah, those are some drums.
It's like hollow water.
It's drums. You know, sometimes I think it's an African type of drum, but it's drums that the doo doo doo. Yeah, that's the drums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you have the siren call of the Dora Milaje.
Yes.
Which I love.
Oh, loved it. And also, go ahead.
I was going to say, it reminds me of Kendrick Lamar. One of his songs uses that sound because it's part of the soundtrack.
Oh,
Black
Panther, yeah.
And he uses it to the effect of like cop sirens. So I thought that shit was fire.
Yeah, I also love that right before you hear that sound, when Yondu steps in, you hear the Guardians theme song.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was great. They kept using theme songs in this episode to great use, so. I mean, just so many dope Easter eggs, so many references. I'm sure we missed, you know, a million. I think we mentioned that we talked about this off air, but like in the bar scene, the Sovereign are in the background. Mm-hmm. The Nova Corps are in the background. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, references to the Skrulls like we discussed. We referenced the Cat Calorian. I don't know. Just look up ROM comic book. It's effed up now because when you Google cat people in Marvel, all you get is references to the Flurkins. You know, like everybody, oh, yeah. Okay. And Rom is such an obscure comic book that is not things that gets a lot of love. But Rom is another great one, just like Howard the Duck.
Good, good. Well, I think we covered everything that we had. That is the end of our review of episode 2 of What If T'Challa Became Star-Lord. We hope you enjoyed yourself. Thank you so much for listening to us and discussing with us and enjoying and questioning things and putting in your own input. We appreciate it. Make sure you do a few things for us. Number one, shout out to everyone on the Twitch, twitch.tv/4allnerds. Make sure you are following us so you get alerts when we're going live and that you can follow along in the chat with us. We see everybody in there. We appreciate you giving all your takes and conversation in there. Make sure you're also subscribed or following or whatever the button says for you on your favorite podcast platform. You want to follow, subscribe to 4allnerds. That's how you listen to Views from the 616, which is our MCU-focused podcast. We on every freaking platinum imaginable. There is no excuse. Make sure you hit us up there. Also, you can follow us on socials at 4allnerds, as well as us individually. I'm at Tatiana King. He's at DJ Benjamin. You can see us there. We're also going to be on TikTok soon. We're going to be doing some really cool shits on there. So we're going to be having a blast on yet another social platform. Probably doing stuff that you will never see on the Twitters and stuff like that. So get ready for that. And as always, thank you to the amazing, incredible, stupendous people of our Patreon. Patreon.com/4allnerds. You all are our lifeblood. We appreciate you. Thank you, everyone who is a patron on there. As I mentioned, make sure you are checking your mailboxes because your rewards are coming. They've been rolling out. We are really excited to see you all get them. And if you got a t-shirt, make sure you wear it. Whether you want to show your face or not, we don't care. Just wear it and tag us. We just want to see the goods. We want to see you shining. We appreciate it. And what did I... Oh, as I said at the top, we have a discount code for Loot Crate. That's FANSHOW15. Is that right? Did I say that right?
Yep.
FANSHOW15 to get 15% off your Loot Crate subscription. Also, we have a Manscaped promo. Benjamin and his amazing Manscaped ad that if you haven't seen it, just please take a minute to watch that. It's just so it's just so perfectly done. You get 20% off. What's the code for that, Benjamin?
4allnerds.
Is it 4allnerds? It is 4allnerds. You get 20% off. And it works on any item in the Manscaped store. So you can just... You can go ham and use it and get a lot of money off. That's great. And lastly, but certainly not least, if you like what we're wearing here, we're wearing our Miss Minutes, Would You Like to F Around and Find Out shirts. There are two variants of this. We have the one here that I have on with the speech bubble. We have Benjamin's where it has the arch, like the McDonald's arch of their slogan. Would you like to F Around and Find Out, y'all? Make sure if you want to F around and find out that you go to our TeePublic, teepublic.com/stores/4allnerds to get this design along with many other beautiful designs. Benjamin held up one of our incredible ones made by Chrissy Chung. She's such a fire artist. She did our Inclusion is Revolution designs. There are like five variants of that along with the many variants of the Views from the 616 logo. You can get these on anything, t-shirts, mugs, phone cases, pillows, whatever the fuck you like, it's all there. We appreciate it if you hit that up as well. Look at that mask, so beautiful, gorgeous.